The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
We're very happy to welcome back to the show. It's been far too long since Marianne Bartels has joined us from Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Well, thank you for having me again.
And in your new job.
Yes.
Tell us what you're doing now.
So I moved over from the investment banking research side where I was the market analyst, and I moved over to the Merrill Lynch platform where I'm the CIO of portfolio strategies for Merrill Lynch.
This is certainly keeping your eye on a lot of things in the U.S. and around the world then.
That is correct.
Well, let's start with your reaction to the stock market. Your reaction to the stock market reacting to the jobs report this morning.
Well, I'm not surprised the market pulled back yesterday. We broke out above 1,700 on the S&P yesterday. What's interesting is even when we're out visiting clients, there's still a lot of skepticism about the markets. We have what's called a sell-side indicator at the firm, and that looks at strategists and their asset allocation, and they're still really not that bullish. So you take valuation, not everybody convinced about the market. So we think the markets are going higher. We have a year-end forecast of 1750 for the S&P. If you look at the technicals, though, you can get the market up a little bit higher around 1775.
Wow, 1775.
Yeah, that's technicals are a little bit stronger.
This year?
This year. I think the market's going to continue to do really well. We might hit some bumps in the road. Seasonally, markets actually peak in the summertime, particularly in August, and then kind of have like a little correction in September, October, and then have a year-end rally. We're just starting to see the great rotation happen. In fact, one could argue that you haven't even seen it yet because we still have positive inflows into the bond market year to date. But we are starting to see some selling as rates back up on the back end of the curve. And now we're starting to see flows come back to the equity market.
Just explain to us, because I'm very interested in this. You had been the head of U.S. technical and market analysis for 8 years or more at Bank of America. And now your portfolio strategies for investment management and guidance. How does your technicals background play into that? Do you have to, you know, cut back a little bit on some of the technical analysis?
Well, I don't do research anymore. So mm-hmm. We do have a wonderful technician that replaced me, Steve Suttmeyer, who does the forecasts. So I am relying on him. But, you know, you can't take the chartist out of me. I have to admit, I still look at the charts.
So it definitely informs some of the portfolio strategies recommend.
I've been looking at charts since I'm a teenager from
Aunt
Bernadette.
You started with your aunt?
And guess who I talked to this morning?
Aunt Bernadette.
Aunt Bernadette, and she told me to tell you, Kathleen, that she sends her regards.
Well, we're going to have to get Aunt Bernadette on the show one of these days. We have an aunt and niece segment. But bonds, you just said that S&P 500 technical suggests you can get to 1775 this year, which would be a nice addition on to where it's already gotten. What about bonds? If you look, say, at the 10-year.
Well, we at the firm have an official year-end forecast on the 10-year of 3% and next year 4%. And the technicals confirm this. You have made an intermediate bottom. You have to really break above 4% to say that the secular decline in rates is over. But we definitely see rates rising. And what we're trying to do is educate our clients that they're going to have now volatility in the fixed income side of their portfolio. And it's something that they're not used to. Typically, though, Kathleen, you know this better than I do. Normally, when we start seeing rates rise at the back end of the curve, the Fed is tightening. And what we're able to offer in terms of asset allocation to our clients is to go to cash and get some income. But in this cycle, because of quantitative easing, that's not an option for our clients.
Because
normally when the rates start rising, we'll put some money into cash, but cash is yielding nothing.
Yeah.
So this cycle is very different from any cycle that we've ever seen before. To really be in cash and get some yield, which is really not a lot, you got to go into the 1 to 3 range on the curve.
But isn't that the point, though, of the Fed trying to is hammering every, you know, really what the Fed's trying to hammer home, it seems, is we are going to taper. We have to taper. We cannot buy bonds forever, guys. September, January, whenever. But we think the economy's tepid enough that we're going to keep that key rate at zero till mid-2015. Doesn't it seem like they're trying to say it's okay, we're going to anchor the short end as much as we can?
It is okay, but the market wants to know the delta change. Markets respond not when it happens, but on the anticipation of change. And the Fed has made very clear that tapering is not tightening, but the market treated it as a tightening. And what I try to explain to our clients is we don't have a playbook on this. We don't have any time in history where we can open up and said, well, the Fed printed this amount of money and this is what happened. So it's going to have some bumps along the road as we interpret. But Ben Bernanke has been very clear in what he's been saying. And what I think is interesting, you know, I had a light bulb go off. And I was thinking about the days of Volcker, and he kept telling Wall Street that he was going to break the back of inflation. Nobody believed him. When rates hit 8%, they were at their record all-time high. Nobody thought rates could go higher, and T-bills got to 21%. He was very, very adamant he was going to break the back of inflation. And now we have a Fed chairperson that is saying they're going to break the back of possibly having deflation, and we're going to remain as accommodative as we possibly can. The little monkey wrench in this is it looks like we'll have a new Fed chairperson in January, and what is that policy going to be like? So I think a lot of people are going to stay on hold, particularly corporates, until they can really figure out what's going to happen in terms of interest rates and tapering.
And just really quickly, you don't think there'll be just a smooth line no matter who the next chairman is?
Generally, history shows that doesn't happen. You really look, earnings are actually pretty decent. We're right in the middle of earnings season. People are concerned because you don't have top line growth, but they still have good cost containment with wages. The valuations are not stressed. We're around 14, 15 times earnings.
What's decent about them, though, apart from valuations? I mean, I know that's a lot, but I mean, there's no revenue growth. You know, cost cutting, can companies possibly do any more of that?
Well, really what you want to look at is the cash on the balance sheet and how they're returning that to shareholders through share repurchases and through giving out dividends and increasing dividends. So when you take the whole combination, the market looks very attractive. And when we talk to clients, because we do portfolio strategies, how are you going to grow your wealth over the next 3 to 5 years? We're forecasting rates are going to rise, so we don't think you're going to do it in the fixed income market. Cash, you're not earning anything, so that's not going to help you. You know, maybe housing. But that's a long-term investment and return. So if you're really looking to grow your wealth, the only option you have right now is the equity market.
Now, Michael Farr from Farr Miller Washington, who's been managing money for a long time, too, his view is that the risk trade, like think emerging markets, that kind of trade, is over for now, for the most part. He's looking at that meaning, and bonds are going to continue to sell off. So and he says the money so far hasn't really come into stocks that much. So he also is positive on stocks, but he's looking at large cap multinationals, go for dividends. He said and he said this is a market now where you really want to know the fundamentals of each company you invest in.
And we do like companies with foreign exposure. In fact, if you group them, and you can call them multinationals on a valuation basis, looking at relative PEs, they're the cheapest in a decade. But one other area that we like is U.S. innovation. And that has a number of sectors. It has technology, energy, and industrials. So in technology, we're talking about cloud computing, cybersecurity. You certainly hear a lot about the cyberspace, 3D printing. I feel like we've entered the Star Trek era. You draw something, you push a button, and you have a kind of a little thing that comes out. It took me a while to understand this because I was a technician. And the Wall Street Journal actually had a great article on 3D printing. And there was a picture of Jay Leno. And he has a collection of cars and antiques that they run. And you can't just go to a junkyard and get a part. And he's standing next to his 3D printer. So we think 3D printing can really alter the manufacturing space. And what a lot of people aren't talking about is wages here in the U.S. are now competitive, even with China. Mexico wages are competitive. And we're seeing Japan come to the United States for manufacturing because they realized after their earthquake that their supplies were too central.
But then are we going to be a nation, Marianne, of workers? And I don't mean to disparage the 5,000 jobs that Amazon created the other day, but they are minimum wage jobs.
Well, I do believe, obviously, and the data supports it, that we need to open up more employment. And we're not seeing that yet. Certainly positive changes on the tax front, because we do have one of the highest tax rates globally, would certainly help. Knowing where the Fed is going and direction of interest rates will certainly help, so they know how to forecast going into 2014. What people aren't talking about, though, in terms of the market, is that next year we're in a midterm election year. And that generally is a little bumpy ground in the market. So I think the markets are going to be pretty good this year. Next year, maybe a little bumpy, but people have been looking for opportunities to get back into the market.
But just briefly on the innovation point before we move on, I mean, innovation brings robots necessarily, right?
I'm afraid of robots. Well, yes, they're going to take our jobs.
I mean, well, let's talk about fracking then. And the technology in fracking within energy has completely altered energy to the point where we feel that we can become energy independent in the coming years. And with the right regulatory change in Washington, maybe become a net exporter. We've seen the deficit improve. Nobody wants to talk about that. And if we can ever export energy, that might actually be good for maybe creating a surplus. But yeah, that's years down the road. But I find that the market, and especially when we're out talking to clients, they always want to focus on the negatives and never want to talk about cash on the balance sheet, good valuations, innovation, manufacturing, fracking, and what it's doing to energy.
Gold. In fact, Peter at Dollar Bear asked about 45 minutes ago for a gold outlook update.
Our official firm forecast was for gold to test 1200, which we did. Year-end target is around 1468, next year up in the 1500 range. But Michael Hartnett, our global strategist, had a wonderful and I think very important observation. When you get major changes in the direction of interest rates, gold tends to change direction, and rising interest rates are not positive for gold. Now, in portfolios for a hedge, we're still recommending it. You know, small portion, because you just never know what might happen. But we saw gold rise up over 500% from the lows of around 2000. I don't think we're going to see that kind of return again.
So you're saying that the target for next year is 1468?
This year.
But next year looks more iffy because
We're forecasting 1,500, but Michael Hartnett has made a great observation and has charts on this. The direction of interest rates change, gold has a tendency to change direction. So we haven't changed the firm's official forecast.
But you're watching it.
But we're watching it because I think that's a very important observation because it costs more to hold gold. I think it's a little bit more interesting to talk about the gold stocks because, right, people will always say, do I do gold? Do I do gold stocks? Gold stocks are trading down near their 2008 low. They have hard assets. And I think that looks a little bit more interesting. They're very cheap. Where that investment gets a little shaky is if gold prices went down to around 1,100. Then they have a little bit of a problem. But this would be a deep value play, something that, you know, an investment that would work over like a 3 to 5 year time frame.
What about crude oil? Because I'm not sure that we've really focused on it, but it's at $106.79 a barrel today, and that's down a dollar.
Well, this is where the technicals become very important. Mm. There's two important peaks in gold, 110 and 114. Some technicians believe that there's...
You mean oil.
I said sorry. Yep. Thank you. Oil. I meant oil. So there's a wedge in oil, 110, 114. If you've already broken out, and if you break 114, I think people are going to really start talking. But I did ask our commodity strategists, what level does oil really become a problem on a global scale? Where does it really start slowing down global GDP? And he said that was 135. So we're not anywhere near that, but it's definitely on the radar screen. But
and you're talking WTI, West Texas Intermediate, okay.
WTI, yep. But it's good for the energy stocks. And we're seeing some pretty positive action. And, you know, I believe it was... it's one of the large integrated energy companies, kind of missed numbers, but the sell-off really wasn't that bad, and I took that as a positive sign.
You know, you have argued in the last couple of years that, and you just mentioned how people aren't focused on any of these big long-term positives, but I can remember, it was over a year ago, your view was that we would and could, once we'd get up to, we'd test that 1500 on the S&P, and then we'd finally get through that, but then it might take another year or two, but you thought secular bull market really carry us to like new highs, et cetera. What is your view now?
It's a secular bull market. I do this in my presentations, and it's a little annoying. The S&P's all-time high, Dow all-time high, small cap, mid cap all-time high, transports all-time high, discretionary stocks all-time high, staples all-time high, industrials all-time high, healthcare all-time high. This is not a bear market.
So how far are we going?
Well, we don't have a long-term forecast, but if you look at the Dow going back to 1900, there are periods where we've traded sideways. Now, it's only been 13 years and we've broken out. That's the earliest we've ever broken out of a consolidation. But history shows once you break out of the range, the markets can go up for 15 years. Right. There's going to be corrections and there's bear markets. I always point out 1987 was a crash in a secular bull market. But it means that the trend is no longer sideways and that we're rising. And after you come out of that range, because you've had bad things happen, we had the tech bubble, we had the financial crisis, markets went down in each period 50%, normally takes individuals about 5 years to regain confidence within the marketplace. And we have a chart showing the inflows into bonds and the outflows into equities, and it's just a tick of inflows into equities. So we think that's a long-term structural shift.
Well, I'm certainly very cheered after this conversation. Are you,
Kathleen? Me too. I feel, yes, great. What a great way. Marianne Bartels, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Our guest host in studio today on the Hays Advantage Bloomberg Radio.
The Hays Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.